listening to the best music in the New River Valley. It's WUBT-FM 90.7, Blacksburg, Christiansburg, Radford.
collector's lounge. No one's afraid to laugh. I said, come on, man, so we break your back. Talk about the metal. What's on top? What else you come here for? What else could this be about? For me, I'm just waiting for the kid to come out. I'm waiting for the kid to come out. And I'm finding out what this is about. Yeah, waiting for the kid to come out. Let it between the bands, everything comes back out, but you can't hold back. And this is like being alive, but you can't hold back. Falls right out of your mouth, but you can't hold back. Here at the Electric Lounge, here at the Electric Lounge, no one's afraid to laugh. You'll get just what you come to expect. To come out, I'll find out what this is about. I don't wait for the kid to come out. Let it be. Guess we're parking. And my wedding was about to start. Dogs were barking, monkeys clapping. Then I get up on table and I said, I meet you 10:45 on the Broadway canal. Diddy disco, radical, trans global. Yo, beat culo, feel sex dura. Выдержит, не выдержит ли аппаратура? Она же мама, диаспора, папа, Гоголь, Бардела, энергия пробуждения, и я. Dogs were barking, monkeys clapping, bears were dancing, and girls were cutting loose. Cops were lurking, kids were snarkling. Then her father came up to me and said, вы бывали когда-нибудь на выставке собак? She was a 545, наше дело табак. Keep it in the life and stay in the life. Да я же старый добрый автор, это Гудула Дэвид.
On the side, dynamite.
Говорит, просто больной, да ничего же не болит.
Fight for your right, for your right.
Вы наша мама, диаспора. Папа в Гоголь, Бардела. Энергия, пробуждение, и я.
Remember things, things that are eternal. Remember things, you forget the things.
Нельзя понять, нельзя измерить. Только простать, и только выть.
To make it all, live and work crooked. It's impossibility, what fuck you inside. You pull the trigger, yet you are still standing. Just on somewhere else, but with same dick in your head. Dogs were barking, and the guests were barking, and the monkeys clapping, and girls were cutting loose, thinking of things, things that are eternal. And when her mother came up to me and said,
dogs were barking, cops were lurking, and my dancing was about to start. Monkeys clapping, party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 经过周围的山。 товарищ Вуд.
Джинкл 545 стайл.
Опа, дерево.
I'm smoking a good sense and feeling I
met a crazy dancer about at the bus. She held me by the hair, I held her by the ass. She was a crazy dancer. She was a crazy dancer.
Turn your morning into singing. Turn your downtown into dancing. Come and have some fun at a party. Feel alive.
Поехал на поди оригинал микстура. С улицы до улицы, до бриллиант басура. Бит фан-клуб, фил секстура. Выдержит, не выдержит ли аппаратура.
We're barking.
Oh, yeah.
Some thoughts from John Cleese.
A surprising result of a recent survey was that the most asked question of American philosophers was neither what is the meaning of life, nor if a tree falls in the forest and no one is there to hear it, etc., etc., but just what is it that philosophers do? The answer is quite a lot. America's philosophers are at work in corporations, labor unions, medical centers and hospices, and of course every day they provoke thinking at thousands of colleges, universities and high schools. Wherever they are, philosophers can ask questions that might just make your life richer and more fulfilling. So, do be careful of those falling trees, won't you? Unless, of course, you're not there.
A message from the Philosophers of America, celebrating 100 years of thought.
Natives wearing turquoise and silver, dirty dogs barking in the distance. Ooh, people of a thousand tongues, I'm learning the primitive rites, known as the Romans do. Mount Carlyle to Mount Everest, and down to the river Ganges. Ooh, to follow your mighty past, well, learning the primitive rites, known as the Romans do. Built in the sky. Ooh, now we're talking digital. We're learning the primitive rites, doing as the Romans do. Millions playing at Monopoly, rolling the dice of their lives, dancing and shaking hands, they're learning the primitive rites, doing as the Romans do.
She wants to let you down easy. She before, and I know, 'cause I see you walking out the door at night. I know it's something different every time you arrive, but don't ask why. She wants to let you down easy. She wants.
Welcome to Talk at the Table. I'm your host, Andy Morikawa. We're coming to you from the studios of WUVT 90.7 FM Blacksburg. This is student-operated, listener-supported radio for the New River Valley community. Our studios are in Squires Student Center on the campus of Virginia Tech. On Talk at the Table, our guests help us understand the rich diversity of the New River Valley community. The discourse is civil. The guests are all our neighbors. Our guest in the studio today is Jack Lesko. He's a professor of engineering mechanics, and he's the associate dean for research and graduate studies in the College of Engineering. and wears another hat as the Vice President for Engineering and Business Development for Power Hub Systems. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you, Andy.
It's great to have you here in our studios. And today's show continues our look into entrepreneurship, innovation, technology, collaboration, and interdisciplinary relationships. In July, we had Bob Summers of TechPad with Marek Zareba and Michael Rahani. And in some upcoming shows, we're going to have students from the Virginia Tech Entrepreneurship Club. They're having an awards ceremony in December, and we're looking forward to having that. And our sense increasingly, Jack, and we're so glad that you could be here with us this afternoon, something's happening at Virginia Tech. It feels very exciting. It feels like there's a convergence of that kind of spirit of academic discipline, and the imagination of the entrepreneur. And they're converging right here at Virginia Tech, and we're glad to have you here to talk about that.
Well thank you, and again, thank you for having me. This is a good time in the New River Valley and in the Roanoke area, particularly if you go back to what happened this past Friday. The Roanoke Blacksburg Technology Council hosted Anish Chopra, who's the U.S. Chief Technology Officer, and he's quoted as saying, "I am so pleased with the assets that you have down here." And I think that's a big recognition of what has evolved here in Blacksburg. When Holly and I arrived here back in 1989, they were just building the mall, and we were excited that there was going to be a Penny's close by. And driving down 460, that whole right-hand side where Walmart wasn't there, was a field of trees. And now to think back and look back at that, you realize that the Corporate Research Center has evolved. I think we've seen the evolution of a lot of companies that have evolved out of a lot of the Hokies, very successful companies. Not only in the technology area, but also in the marketing area, but certainly centered around technology, digital media. But there is a growing interest, and even as I had started to look into the position of associate dean and talking with some of my colleagues, they were excited to know that I, too, had the opportunity to start a business and learn a little bit about it. So,
and congratulations on that new assignment.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And my understanding is that the charge that you've been given is to enable faculty and students and staff to collaborate more effectively and to work across disciplinary boundaries. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yes. To me, that's a very important piece of at least my background. I was very fortunate when I came up and, in fact, got my master's and PhD here at Virginia Tech with some folks involved in a National Science Foundation Science and Technology Center. And we worked across disciplines. We work with College of Science and folks in chemistry. And we had some very good mentors, both of which are National Academy members, or two of which are National Academy members now, Ken Rieschneider and Jim McGrath. And I've been mentored by them, as well as people like Judy Riffle and from chemistry, and Garth Wilkes from chemical engineering, to understand the real benefits of being able to talk one another's language. It's not always easy when you're trained in a discipline-specific way with specific language and specific ways of actually doing things and analyzing problems, that you realize that walking into somebody else's situation, seeing how they think, understanding the kinds of things that they're worried about, the kinds of mechanisms, and really I think that science and engineering comes down to the physical mechanisms, being able to describe them, understand them, and obviously within the real world, be able to control them for value to society. I think these are very important pieces, and I think it branches out beyond that. And what I have learned in my experience in helping to start a company with Glenn Scutt, who is also a Hokie, And we are a spinoff, actually, of VPT Inc., which does DC to DC converters for the aerospace industry. Again, Hokie started with a lot of technology from Virginia Tech, but realizing that that's just one piece of it. There are smaller, more critical things that could come and bite you at the end of the day if you're not aware of them, if you haven't paid attention to them. And in fact, several situations that I've been in with companies that have been started by technology-based people, they don't always have all the skill sets that they need to be able to really go out there and be successful in the marketplace.
So this really underscores the importance of that cross-disciplinary capacity for a university to encourage entrepreneurship, innovation. And you were observing, before we went on air, Jack, one of the practices of the university, of the academy, is the sabbatical for folks like yourself. And the sabbatical that you took, you said, I think I remember this accurately, that when you came back, that you were thinking differently.
Yeah.
And talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, and actually sabbaticals in the Commonwealth are referred to as research study leaves. And sometimes the word sabbatical doesn't lean very well on our friends in Richmond. But really they are great opportunities for faculty to renew themselves. And in many ways that ability to renew yourself either in a different discipline or to be able to focus on something that you haven't been able to accomplish in previous years or to completely go and do something different, like I was given the opportunity by Dean Benson to go off and help to co-found this business, Power Hub Systems. During that time, there were a lot of different things that I wasn't aware of, and I think probably the best thing that I learned is that there were a lot of things I didn't know. And that was a very valuable experience for me, because as I began to look at what it was I was doing as an educator and as a researcher, I began to realize how small of a piece of the puzzle that I was looking at. I began to realize it's not just about doing something neat and putting it in a piece of in a paper that many people read, where that is very valuable. Many very significant contributions have been made. Those have obviously been noted by Nobel laureates. But there are other things that make those successful down the road, and how close, obviously, you want to be to that final solution, you know, depends upon if you're going to be a pure theoretical scientist or you're going to be an engineer that has a science leaning, or if you're going to be an engineer that has a practical leaning. And so as I came out of this and came back to teaching, I realized there were a lot of things in the business world that I didn't understand about what it was the technologies that I was trying to get out into the into service, that there were other things that I hadn't really considered. The idea of value proposition, the idea of was I going to be able to convince somebody to fund what we wanted to do, and the difficulties associated with running a large complex project, being able to manage that within, in many cases, not very well-defined requirements because of their evolution. So I certainly began to think about, well, what are those other skills that I would need? And during that time, I was able to take a finance course and spent some time reading a number of different books that have given me added benefit in terms of the context that had been formed during the research leave.
So this is really, again, it underscores the role that a great university has in providing support for its faculty to do this kind of work, that you do need that time to reflect, to learn, to deepen your understanding, to expand your horizons in a sense. And it really is a part of the charge that you've been given to encourage this sense of collaboration, of entrepreneurship, and of linking the academy and business together. And
correct.
You're rooted in the experience that you have with Power Hub Systems. And just speak to us just a little bit about Power Hub Systems. It's in looking and doing my own research for the program, it's a fairly esoteric charge that your company
exactly.
that your company has.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that. It's a sense that I had always understood that with the power grid, because a lot of the work that you're doing is about that and alternative energy sources and how they interact, that energy supply is one thing, but storing it is something else.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, until fairly recently, you can't store the energy. It just is there
and
or
it's used.
Not.
Right.
And it's used. That's exactly right.
Right.
But what you've done with Power Hub Systems is a twist on that.
Right. And you're absolutely right. And part of my learning also in this interdisciplinary was to spend more time understanding the power grid, power systems, and power electronics. And one of the things, and I'm sorry for the tangent here, but one of the exciting things for me was to see how my mechanics degree, the fundamentals associated with it, could be applied. The same sort of mathematical models, the same sort of understanding of general mechanisms could be solved in the power electronics area. So it was exciting for me to see that as well. So I apologize for going off on that tangent. But the reality is that I learned a great deal about the power grid. And you know, one of the things that I understood before but didn't really appreciate how big of a challenge it was for the power companies was to be able to control demand or balance demand against supply. And that's what the power grid does. And the power grid has to do that right now from a very centralized system. We make power in one place, we transmit it and distribute it and use it. If you use too much, the voltage starts to drop, things start to get hairy at your location, and the frequency changes. And our equipment, our computers at home and various other sensitive pieces of equipment, they rely on a certain characteristic set of criteria for how that power is generated and comes into the device. So what we have been looking at is this idea of how do we balance the grid, not just from a central location, but from a distributed perspective. Mm-hmm. And for us, that really started off with hybrid electric vehicles. Originally, Glenn and I had started off talking about plug-in electric conversions for vehicles, and there was a group called CalCars that was started by Felix Kramer out in San Francisco, and they began looking at, well, how could we take a Prius and turn it into a plug-in electric Prius, meaning that they would put a extra set of batteries into it to give it a longer electric range, and that they would also put a charger in it so they could actually charge.
And the distinction is that the current Prius, the one that's mass-produced, really generates its own, it charges its own batteries.
That's
correct.
You can't
plug it in to
that's
the grid.
Correct. And there is a version that's going to be coming out in 2012, I believe, from Prius that'll have, and I want to say it's about an 18-kilometer range, okay, of all electric. And you can actually ride it, you can drive it at all electric above 35 miles an hour, which is actually a limit for the Prius right now, which only has maybe about a mile and a half range.
Okay.
But that's exactly correct. And in the hybrid vehicles, what you're saying is that you've got an electric motor with a battery, and you've got a gas engine, internal combustion engine with gasoline. And you can either charge the batteries through turning the engine, the motor into a generator being driven by the engine, or as you slow down, instead of putting all the energy of absorbing and slowing the vehicle into brake dust and noise, mm-hmm, and heat, you can then turn that motor, generator, and also charge the battery. So as you're going down a hill or you're braking, you'll actually see that battery be recharged. So, yes, it is an enclosed system. But one of the things that Glenn Scott and I had spoken about was this idea that, well, if you've got these batteries, how often during the day is that car parked? Mm-hmm. And so there were a number of folks, like I said, with Cal Cars and a number of folks up at University of Delaware, Kempton and company, who had looked at vehicle to grid. So let's make that charger not only be able to go from AC to DC, charge that battery, and then allow you to use it as a transmission fuel, but when those batteries aren't being used, could it be used to service the grid? Make it a resource.
You have a bi-directional kind of...
Exactly, setup, yeah. Exactly. And as you can imagine, that gets to start to get... That becomes complicated, right? If we go back to what the utility wants to do, they want to have control over all those sources,
right.
And now they don't. And so this really leads you into the idea of communication. And when I look at the smart grid, and really where I think if you were to look at the umbrella of where we're playing in is in the smart grid area, trying to develop a means for you to communicate back and forth. I'm using this amount of power. I've got this amount of power available to you. You tell me if you need it. I'll tell you if I can give it to you, and I'll tell you how much I can give it to you, how much I can give to you at any one time, and or price. You can barter. You can say, okay, I've got, 7 kilowatt hours. I'll sell it to you for 25 cents a kilowatt hour. And depending upon what's going on in your neighborhood or in the region, the power company might say, nah, I'm not interested. I'll go to somebody else. I'll go to one of my peak shavers. It's cheaper there. But there may be times when it's cheaper for them to take it from your vehicle. And obviously there are life issues and using your batteries and so forth. But the bottom line, as we began to look at this, we began to realize that, it was going to be very difficult to work with the utility and penetrate the market that way, as well as also getting these systems into vehicles, having to deal with the automotive industry. And as we began to look at that, our market analysis said, this is going to be very, very difficult. We're going to have very high barriers to entry. And in fact, what you're seeing right now are a lot of plug-in electric vehicles coming out, the Leaf, the Volt, the Prius. There's a format that's going to come out on the Ford Focus. They're just one direction,
mm-hmm.
Because you've got that complex set of situations. And so what we decided to do was work directly with utilities. We began working with American Electric Power, who was interested in this idea of community energy storage. And the idea is that you take essentially what you would put in a plug-in electric vehicle, bidirectional, you put it on a pad right next to those green boxes that are in your neighborhood. So you're familiar with Westover. When you go walking in there, you see those green boxes. Well, that brings the high voltage from the power company and turns it into the lower voltage, the two-phase split 240, 120 on one of two phases, onto each house. And the idea would be to use those batteries to help balance things out, to do peak shaving. So in the summer when things get very warm, everybody's air conditioner's on, the power lines have maxed out, the power plants have maxed out, they don't want to turn on the peakers. They can actually bring that power back, use that power from the batteries, where it perhaps may have been stored at night when there was an excess of power or there was not a very high demand. The project that we're doing right now in California, in Sacramento, California, deals with actually firming solar. The solar peak and the maximum use peaks are off by a few hours. And what we'd like to be able to do is take advantage of charging the batteries during a time when solar's high, demand's low, and then delivering that back.
Smoothing everything out.
And that's exactly what the utility would like to do, but they need that ability to control the power flow. They need the ability to control and understand what's happening in various areas, again, because they have to deal with this balance issue.
And that's what Power Hub Systems is about.
And that's really what we're about. We're about controlling the power electronics in a bidirectional sense so that you won't see your lights flicker as things change, but also being aware of and being able to communicate in a way, And this is, again, another interdisciplinary problem. How do you communicate with the power company? How do you make sure that you're getting the right signals, that everybody's on using the same language or using the same set of criteria to make decisions as to when to charge, when to discharge, when to store? And so those are very big issues in the smart grid area. And, you know, smart meters, everybody's, I think, has begun to hear a little bit more about. Those are helping in that communication piece.
You're listening to Talk at the Table. We're here with our guest, Jack Lesko, who is the Associate Dean for Research and Graduate Studies in the College of Engineering. And if you've got a question for Jack or an observation on the subject that we're exploring here this afternoon, give us a call, 231-9888. That's 231-9888. We're going to take a short music break and listen to River by Mary Chapin Carpenter from her album Mary Chapin Carpenter.
River full of stones when there's no rain. River full and rushing when clouds let loose care. River every season like a prayer. We're standing in the shallows making crosses in the air. Wanna build the strongest bridge. Wanna love you the best I can. Feel no fear upon the edge. Baby, take my hand. River like a poem to the trees. River telling stories to the rushes and the leaves. River every season like a vow. Standing in the shallows wondering save us now. Wanna build the strongest bridge. Wanna love you the best I can. Feel no fear upon the edge. Here's my heart, baby, take my hand. From the currents to the pools. River turning kinder, turning suddenly to cruel. River every season like a dream. We're standing in the shallows wading in to wash us clean. Best I can. Feel no fear upon the edge. Here's my heart, baby, take my hand. Wanna build the strongest bridge. Wanna love you the best I can. Feel no fear upon the edge. Here's my heart, baby, take my hand.
all sorts of excuses for not saving energy. It's only one lamp. It's
just one TV. It's like all the way in the other room. What difference will it make if I turn things off when I'm done with them or not? If we switch to energy-saving light bulbs, or put in a programmable thermostat,
how much energy and money could it possibly save? Sometimes I wonder if we could be more efficient with the energy we have now and tuck away more resources for later.
You know, it just never hurts to plan more for the future. My name is
Colin, and I'm going to get started today.
We can all help save more energy for tomorrow. What's your excuse? For more energy-saving tips that also save money, visit loseyourexcuse.gov/parents. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Ad Council, and this station.
And hi, and welcome back. You're listening to Talk at the Table. This is WUVT 90.7 FM Blacksburg, student-operated, listener-supported radio for the New River Valley community. Our studios are in the Squire Student Center on the campus of Virginia Tech. Our guest today is Jack Lesko. He's a professor of engineering mechanics and the associate dean for research and graduate studies in the College of Engineering, and he was speaking earlier in the first segment about a visit that was paid us by the Chief Technology Officer for the United States. And he was saying that he was very pleased with the resources that he saw here. What did he see, Jack?
Well, first off, he got the chance to go see Bob Summers, who you've had on here previously. His operation called TechPad, which actually one of my former students has actually graduated from in some respects, and his name is Fred Cook. I actually talked with Fred this morning, and he was coming back from Washington, D.C. After a week of some work with his new venture. But he saw a lot of these young folks that are interested in starting new ventures. He also saw things and realized how significant the Corporate Research Center is, and I think the tremendous investment that the Virginia Tech Foundation has made, and I think under the great leadership of Joe Meredith, has been able to now not only complete a phase one, but also now move on to a phase two of 25, 27 some odd new buildings coming into place with another million square feet. That's not insignificant. And not only is Joe putting in the infrastructure, but in a discussion I had with him a couple of weeks ago, his vision is significant in terms of the people, understanding that you do need to get a critical mass. You do need to be able to develop that sense that there is something here, and putting the people first in terms of moving an organization and allowing them to come down here, settle, and then be able to be successful